that would be Mr. Quillen and Mr. Campbell. If you have not, please sign in either before or at the conclusion of your argument. And Mr. Quillen, would you like to reserve any type of rebuttal time?
Yes, ma'am, please, 4 minutes.
Certainly. Thank you.
My name is Bill Quillen from Lynchburg, court appointed to represent Mr. Miles in this matter. I was not trial counsel. Not that that makes a big difference, but just point out the court. We're all familiar with a tried and true classic written by Margaret Mitchell many years ago, where Butterfly McQueen, playing the role of Chrissy, says, "Miss Garlic, I don't know nothing about birthing babies." Well, go back and view that thing. Margaret Mitchell didn't feel the necessity to bring an expert in to tell Miss Prissy how to help Miss Scarlett birth babies. What we're dealing with here is the...
Would it have been error if she had?
In that case, it depends on who that brought it. at the point in time, I think that question goes to the crux of my point here. Let me point out some of the areas in which we do have scientific, commonly accepted expert testimony that I don't think any of us challenge. DNA. I think we all accept without any equivocation. Of course, we challenge the results that, and different experts, of course, can quibble. Drug analysis. We have to have forensic chemists to do drug analyses. We have police officers, FBI officers, officials who are fingerprint experts, ballistic experts, pathologists, cause of death. Each one of these, if you'll note, every single one of these that I've noted deals with a scientific, or at least a semi-scientific base, which has in its background figures, calculations that deal with pinpointing something from a scientific basis. What we're dealing with in the Miles case is a gentleman who has said that I've been in the FBI for years and years and years, and I've visited crime scenes for years and years and years, and therefore, because of that fact, I'm an expert. Well, be that as it may, expert qualification is a label we put in, and we're so familiar with experts right now. Every expert, every person that deals with the presidential election is an expert. Every person dealing with the Super Bowl is an expert. So that label sort of falls flat sometimes. So we need to look at what makes a person into an expert, and whether in effect that qualification is sufficient to accomplish what an expert needs to accomplish. And our position is basically that there is nothing that when you deal with DNA, when you deal with fingerprints, when you deal with drug analysis, intrinsically, those are things that common people, the everyday person, you, me, everyday person, does not deal with on a regular, everyday basis. I wouldn't know a fingerprint analysis if it bit me in the nose. I've seen it, trying to look at a DNA computation is like trying to read an insurance policy, which both are impossible. So what we're dealing with here, if anything, is what I would say is somewhat of a, you want to phrase it, it's a pseudoscience. And as such, it's more or less like smoke and mirrors.
The Virginia Rules of Evidence allow experts for all kinds of things that aren't, quote, hard sciences, don't they? I mean, accountants, economists testify in the courts of the Commonwealth every single day.
Correct.
And they are experts.
Correct. I think that as an accountant, many times when an accountant testifies to those detailed, intricate things that the average person can't do. Let's look at this case. This is a case where you're dealing with basically the inside of a dwelling. And you're looking at what happened in the inside of a dwelling. And you're looking at things like, how was the victim positioned? Was there something over her face, which there was? Was there a magazine rack on her chest? Was there any evidence of things being taken or stolen or ransacked? Were the things along this line? Well, you know, where have we gone wrong from the standpoint of allowing arguments in case? Why do we have to have every single thing brought to us in a finite fashion, or allegedly in a finite fashion, to say this is the way it is?
Counsel, let me interrupt you for just a moment,
sure,
if I may. The Compton case is a case that talked about blood spatter analysis. Mm-hmm. How is this case different from the Compton case with regard to the testimony about the glass and the fact that the glass was sort of spattered, for lack of a better phrase?
I would venture to say this. I think the blood splatter, one who testifies as to blood splatter, that is a basis upon which you have some scientific background to ascertain that when a wound is made and the blood is going to go in a specific direction, that involves a scientific calculation about speed and distance and directions and so forth and so on. I think there is still a scientific basis that applies therein. There's nothing scientific about glass being on a floor inside a door. There's nothing scientific about a memo or a folder being on a bed with three pieces of paper beside it. There's nothing scientific about dresser drawers not being open. These are the kinds of things which, if you talk about it every day, a person, an everyday individual, these are the kinds of things which fall within common knowledge. Common experience is one of the factors that we use in the rule. And common experience, I would say, equates to basically common sense. Therefore, we have to assume that a trier of fact, whether it be a judge or whether it be a jury, has the ability to exercise common sense. And we don't need to tell them every single thing. If you walk into my house, or you walk into the house of this elderly lady, if you walked into her house, you would see certain things. Which, if you walked in and viewed the crime scene or viewed the pictures of the crime scene, those are things that a Commonwealth attorney can and should argue. I think we get into a very, very slippery slope, when we say that anything that does not have a scientific, a mathematical, some kind of technical basis, and I think the blood splatter does, I think the accountant does, I think the DNA and the fingerprints and so forth, it doesn't have a scientific basis.
How about a plumber?
A plumber?
Yeah. Could a plumber be an expert?
Yes, I think a plumber could be an expert. I think a mechanic, what we often do with situations with mechanics and dealing with cars, and come in as textifies experts as far as repair works and certain things like that.
On your common sense, common experience argument, isn't it more likely that the average juror has dealt with a plumbing problem than they've investigated a crime scene?
Oh, I think that's probably correct. At the same time, I think most people live inside a house and know how a house looks and know how disarray takes place and things of this nature. I think the problem we went into, which we have to avoid at all costs, and I think this is where slippery slope comes in, is that I think it gets very close to profiling when we allow areas in this to come into play And I think that is dangerous.
Let me ask you about that, because that was something that you had mentioned in your brief. And wasn't this more of a description of a crime scene as opposed to a description of a perpetrator, which would have been profile?
Yeah, but I think there's a tendency sometimes, and I think the White case referred to this, is that sometimes when you deal with a crime scene analysis and profile, it's difficult sometimes to separate one from the other because they seem to flow together. And so therefore, when you have somebody coming in, I mean, jurors aren't idiots. And they know that if somebody's coming in and pinpointing a crime scene situation, then they're pointing at the individual who's on trial right there. So the crime scene analysis intricately points at that particular person. It's not profiling per se, but I think it tends to, the two tend to warp over into each other. The Compton case is I think interesting. I quote from the an expert witness may provide testimony, including opinions, if the fact finder, quote, is confronted with issues that cannot be determined intelligently from the deductions made and inferences drawn on the basis of ordinary knowledge, common sense, and practical experience gained in the ordinary affairs of life, and thus require scientific or specialized knowledge. So what we're saying here is that the average person doesn't see a larceny occurring on a regular basis. And the average person doesn't see shoplifting occurring on a regular basis. The average person doesn't see robbery occurring on a regular basis. Do we traditionally bring in crime scene experts to testify about the facts of a larceny, the facts of a shoplifting, the facts of a robbery to say this took place under these circumstances, and therefore this is the analysis you need to view here? And I think that's where the problem comes in, that if you have this individual that you label as an expert, then all of a sudden everybody's ears perk up and everybody says, expert. And so therefore what this expert says is viewed in a fashion which gives it undue weight. And because it gives it undue weight, does it really serve the purpose of doing those things that common sense cannot do itself? Common sense would say in this case, the house was not tampered with, nothing was taken, so that seems to be, it couldn't be a home invasion. Do we need an expert to tell us that? Do we need an expert to tell us that for some reason or other, the face was covered, a magazine rack was placed upon the body. We need an expert to say this dealt with some kind of feeling that the alleged perpetrator had regarding the victim. Do we need an expert to say this, or can we just say, hey, we're common people, we got sense, we know these things, and that's because of the fact that we are. It's not necessarily common experience, but common experience and common sense are what we're talking about.
You agree that under Virginia law, one can be an expert through dint of professional experiences?
Yes.
And you agree that this person at least qualified in that regard?
I did not. I was not involved in the trial, so, I mean, he did qualify. Yes, the judge did qualify, and that's correct.
And there's no assigned error that he wasn't qualified. It's what he testified to.
It's basically the fact of there being an expert involved in a case like this in the first place is what we're talking about. Let me just raise one more issue here as far as one more point. When you say that we're not familiar with these things, perhaps we're probably altogether maybe too familiar with these things. I mean, we see forensic files, we see CSI, we see all these things on TV all the time. So trying to say that we're not, as a unfortunate group of people in the United States that are exposed to things of this nature, that's not necessarily true, because we are all the time, to our disgust sometimes and to our irritation, but they're there and we have to deal with them. So again, in the Compton case, again, we're talking about the fact that it deals with common sense, and it says common sense has to be used and common sense has to be is the key issue as far as that's concerned. So therefore, there are cases, don't get me wrong, there are cases that do require and do necessitate and do speak out for and call for experts. But in a situation like this, there is, if you look at what the expert testifies to, there is nothing. And I hate to use the word nothing because that's sometimes too strong. But there's nothing he said that the average person could not, with a good argument from the Commonwealth attorney, be pointed to say, this is something that in your mind, in your common experience, in your common sense, in your knowledge of what happens inside a household and how people can violate people in households, this is something that you fear, ladies and gentlemen, to figure out yourself or you can figure out the church. I'm not sure, I forgot to check my time, but I think I'll...
got 22 more.
Pardon me?
You've got 19 more seconds right now.
before the 11 minutes.
Sorry?
For the 11 minutes. I reserved 4.
Yes, sir. You reserved 4 minutes, I believe.
Okay.
Four.
Thank you very much. I'll speak in a few minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Quill. Mr. Campbell.
Good morning. Please, the court, Aaron Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. Let me begin here. When I was preparing for this case, it kind of dawned on me that this really isn't scientific evidence. This is actually specialized knowledge, which is allowed under the rules of evidence in Virginia. I think that's what Judge Russell's pointed out with Illinois and such, that you don't have to have scientific knowledge to testify. You can have specialized knowledge. And that's essentially what this type of expert testimony was, that this FBI agent had specialized knowledge in his expertise of looking at crime scenes and evaluating crime scene evidence. As to the appellant's argument that this was just simply common sense, that it was not beyond the knowledge and experience of everyday jurors, I would disagree, and for a couple reasons. This was not simply the case that there was nothing stolen, there was nothing disturbed, therefore there was no burglary. This was an expert that was able to come in and testify and say, and give context to what these jurors would be seeing in the pictures of the scene. For example, if he was able to look at the broken glass, which I would, Judge O'Brien mentioned, I would say is comparable to the blood splatter evidence in Compton. And also, one point about this is that the trial judge in this case, on pages 24 through 25, he made a ruling that I don't believe that the ordinary, everyday citizen would have experience with crime scenes. That was essentially what he ruled. And I think that is a very reasonable ruling, that the average everyday person does not have experience with crime scenes of this nature or any crime scene, and that it would be helpful to have an expert come in and give some context to the crime scene. Just because the juror may see something on CSI or some other television show does not make them an expert or have them the ability to use their common sense to explain what they are seeing. And so my point with the decision on whether or not this was common sense, this is an abuse of discretion standard that we are under, and that the trial court's ruling that this was beyond the ordinary knowledge and experience of the average juror is not an abuse of discretion by the trial court in making that ruling. I'll touch on profile evidence just quickly since it was discussed. I think there is a problem with the argument because the motion in limine, the trial court made a conditional ruling that this expert could testify provided that he qualified as an expert. But the trial court also said that profile evidence would be inadmissible. when it got to trial, there was no objection to any testimony whatsoever that this expert had testified beyond what was agreed upon in the motion in limine. So I think there probably is a 518 problem with this case when it comes to profile evidence. Also, I would disagree with appellant's position that profile evidence is inherently inadmissible. I don't think.
Well, what about Judge O'Brien's point that it was talk about a scene and not a person, and that makes it not profile evidence at all?
Yeah, that was going to be my next point. And I don't think this is, I don't think it's inherently inadmissible. And at no point did the appellant argue reasons why this was inadmissible. What courts have found inadmissible is it's not relevant, it goes to character evidence, etc. But to the larger point, I don't think this is profile evidence whatsoever. I think that this is crime scene analysis, and I would point to the Alabama court, the Simmons case that I cited on brief, that did a good job of explaining the difference between profile evidence and crime scene analysis. Even the case I think cited so heavily by the appellant, the Wright case, the unpublished case from Delaware, even it pretty much admitted that these are different. One final point. On brief, the appellant has challenged the reliability of this expert testimony. It's not at all contained in his assignment of error. So I think just for that alone, I don't think the court can actually reach the reliability of this expert's testimony. Even so, even if they did, I think that this is perfectly reliable under our rules that we have in Virginia. We are not, as the court is well aware, we are not a Daubert state. We are, the trial judge has a very limited gatekeeper role when it comes to expert testimony, in that we only, trial judges are only shielding jurors from expert testimony whenever it's inherently credible. And I don't think that based on all the evidence in this case that we can say that this expert's testimony is inherently credible, that the jury couldn't make a decision about its credibility.
Well, you would concede that the trial judge had made the opposite finding on whether people were familiar with crime scenes generally, then he could say that the expert couldn't testify, even if he were a credible expert.
Yeah, it would be a finding of fact that we would probably be stuck with.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Quillen.
I'll be very brief. I'm not sure I addressed your question about the plumber early on. Let me make sure I test that. I think we're dealing with a plumber, an electrician, or something of this nature. Yeah, we all have knowledge about electricians. We all have knowledge about plumbers and things like this. We also then, again, I'm getting back to my, maybe I'm putting too much argument point on this, but it's a semi-scientific, a pseudo-scientific type thing. These are things that are done. We understand how the flow of water takes place. We understand how things are put together. We understand electricity. We understand how those things go. But at the same time, we can't put them together in a fashion like that. Specialized knowledge, Mr. Cameron, address specialized knowledge. Well, what exactly is specialized knowledge? I would say specialized knowledge, again, is something that we're not dealing so much with the fact that what specialized knowledge is or is not. What we're dealing with basically right here is whether we're almost invading the province of the jury by saying this is something that is beyond your personal knowledge, beyond your, that you can't look at this thing in a common sense fashion and come to a conclusion. I don't think it can be a thing. I think you clearly understand what my position is. Well, thank you for your time here. We hope you'll come with us to my office. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Quillen. We'll come down and greet counsel.